Okay. Karen, are you with us? All right, great.
I am.
We'd like to welcome everybody tonight to Karen Scholl's teleseminar. Karen provides a unique approach to horsemanship. And I'm your host, Melinda Garish, and I'm from Shirley, Indiana. And we appreciate you joining us tonight. And we thank everybody that submitted questions, and we'd like for those to keep coming. So, Karen, are you ready to get started this evening?
You bet.
Okay. The topics tonight, Karen, are one is refuses to go forward. And the second one will be on kicking. The third one is maintain trot or canter. And the fourth question is keep my horse focused. And then the fifth one is a mouthy horse. So we'll go ahead this evening and get started. The first one, it says, Karen, do you make a DVD on refusing to go forward? Need help badly. Thanks, Sandy.
Okay. That is one of the topics in the new series that was recently released, Fix It Today. We haven't released the Refusing to Go Forward yet, so it's not in the titles yet. But I can kind of describe the situation a little bit, and what you can do is start kind of thinking of what might be contributing to the behavior. You see horses not moving forward in different scenarios. And from a horse that won't step foot on a racetrack to a horse that won't go out of the box in a team roping situation to a horse that won't leave the barn, you know, on a trail ride or a hack. And what's happening in the horse's mind is whatever the horse is perceiving as out there is not as appealing as to what it's perceiving as behind them or staying in that one place. So one of the things that's important to understand and to recognize is, you know, what's the pattern of the situation that the horse is, you know, we're seeing a behavior, but the behavior oftentimes is a result from a predictable scenario. So say, for example, horses that refuse to go forward to go into an arena at a barrel race. And if you think about it from the horse's point of view, the last thing that happened inside a barrel, you know, an arena with barrels set up is, you know, coming towards home, usually a lot of pressure is put on a horse because they're wanting to win the barrel race. And so people don't understand, you know, or not just don't understand, but accept that a horse has to be led in or driven in or, you know, ponied in, you know, whatever it is, several people have to, you know, lead this horse into the arena rather than take some time with the horse and repattern the behavior. So let me describe repatterning the behavior. Say a horse doesn't want to go out on a trail ride. It gets to a spot and his hour is up and we never go this far and they just stop. They just plant their feet. One of the things to do is to make going out a more pleasant experience than going home. So I'll give you an example. This kind of goes into barn sour, you know, type of scenario. But when I take horses out on a ride, I don't necessarily go out and do the hard stuff, you know, away from the barn. And then, you know, they come home to the barn and it's all the good stuff. All the, you know, they get some grain and they get to hang out and, you know, go back and relax. I'll actually narrow this down to say an arena. Horses that won't go into a corner in the arena or want to just hang at the gate. If you get into a pattern of where you get off when you finish your time riding, you get off over in a far corner and you hang out there for a little bit, maybe walk around with that horse and pick up rocks, you know, and toss rocks so that horse doesn't think, gosh, my happiness is going to be when I'm out that gate and through that gate and nothing good happens over here on this side of the arena. So if you can kind of get your mind around that to think, okay, what's the pattern that I'm putting this horse into that's being reflected in behavior? So when I, you know, shoot that kind of a video, I'm going to give lots of different scenarios, but I can describe it to you right here, and I'll bet you're already going, oh, I get it. You know, go out on a trail ride and have your horse eat grass. Everybody says, oh, never eat grass on a trail ride. Well, if I cue my horse to eat grass by putting pressure on the mane, you know, pretty soon my horse gets more balanced on my trail ride. That horse says, boy, we're going to go out. I don't know what's going to happen out there, but it might be some good stuff. So they get even. They get, you know, horses always come home faster than they go out. Well, I want my horse to feel balanced, not just from, you know, pestering them all the time or driving them all the time or things like that, but because the horse is happy to go to, you know, where I take them, you know. So when you're asking a horse to go forward, the other piece of it is when you ask a horse to go forward, offer the sequence of pressure. So you're going to activate your body. You're going to gradually add a squeeze to your legs, turn your toes out, put your toes down. You can pick them up with the heels. The instant the horse moves forward, take the pressure off. This is another reason why horses quit on people, because say they go riding in the arena, and we've all seen it, we've been taught it sometimes. I've had lessons where the instructor was saying that this is how you ride a horse, because that's what they were taught, is that with every stride with a horse, whatever the gait is, we're told to put the pressure on with our legs and keep the pressure on and keep the pressure on and keep the pressure on. And, you know, you'll see people riding just, you know, squeezing that horse every step. Well, to me, you know, a horse shouldn't need to feel like I'm pedaling a bicycle. You know, it's the horse's responsibility to, and actually this kind of ties into what I heard you say, Melinda, the other question about having a horse maintain trot. This probably ties into that same question. When the horse is doing what you ask them to do, whether it's circling around you on the ground on a lunge line, or walking on a trail, or trotting, or jumping, those kinds of things, when they're doing what you ask them to do, they're just like husbands. When they're doing what you ask them to do, leave them alone. See, we get in there and we get involved and we think, well, I have to keep the pressure on to have this horse keep going. That's one of the main things I teach, you know, in my clinics, is when that horses, because they're motivated by comfort, when they're doing what you ask them to do, take the pressure completely off. Even when a horse is circling around you, I can sit there, relax, rest the stick on my legs, and pass the rope behind my back. And you will say, well, you know, why did your horse keep going? And I said, because he's happy out there. He's in comfort. He's trying to figure out what he needs to do to get me to do his favorite thing, which is to take the pressure completely off and leave him alone. So there's lots of little things that can contribute to a horse not going forward. So, you know, it's a simple question with a pretty expansive answer, and I could go on and on, but I think by these ideas, if you can see what the scenario is it's setting up, and then get creative in your mind, maybe even breaking our own rules, you know, we've been told, you know, it doesn't have to be every time you go on a trail ride, you have your horse eat grass. You know, you use a pattern to, change an old pattern by overlaying it with a new pattern, but pretty soon start mixing up the pattern so it becomes less predictable. You know, horses are just like us. They're creatures of habit. And if you, sometimes I'll give people a suggestion or an idea, and then 3 years later they say, well, now every time I go on a trail ride, I have, you know, my horse is trying to eat grass. See, that's another scenario. You want to be able to mix it up. And if you listen to past fellow seminars, you'll see that I've covered horses eating when you haven't asked them to. You know, so you should be able to communicate when you ask them to and when you ask them not to. So, you know, it's always about expanding our communication with horses in all these scenarios. But I'll bet you if you get creative, use your imagination, and think, okay, what can I do to make what I'm asking the horse to be more appealing? Whether you, create a scenario where, you know, you're using things that you're going to change up later, or you may just realize, gosh, I'm, you know, kicking this horse, I'm bumping this horse in the ribs with every step. And that horse thinks, well, why should I take a step? If I take a step, I'm just going to get bumped in the ribs. So sometimes that'll make them quit on you too. So start just kind of doing some self-examination and see if you can't kind of be a little bit of a detective and get into that horse's mind, make the right thing easy, the wrong thing difficult. It's back to the basics, and just go back to those basic understandings and then rebuild it. And I'll bet you'll find that answer. And send me an email. Let me know what you found.
All right. Well, Sandy, thank you for submitting your question. So Karen, this next one, when I read it, I thought the poster that you had out, I don't know, a year or two ago, that said "Get help before you get hurt." And I don't know if you know which one I'm talking about, but and then as I read this more, I thought, okay, this lady really needs your DVDs, all of them. So let me read this. This one's from Maureen, and it says, she just bought a horse that is as sweet as can be. When I ask her to lunge, she pins her ears, charges, or kicks at me. If I don't ask her to work, she's fine, loves attention. She spins around so fast that before I'm prepared, her butt is in my face. The person I bought her from is a horse trainer, and she said she hadn't been touched in a couple of years, but she wasn't like this. She does not do groundwork, so I wasn't sure if she just rides her. We will still have problems on the ground. If you could help me before I get hurt, I would really appreciate it. Maureen.
Yeah. Well, and I do remember that, Melinda, and actually I came across some of the cards, and, you know, it's an image of a person, like, on their way to taking a, you know, flying lesson without a pilot's license.
Yeah.
And, the horse has bogged its head, and her behind is up out of the saddle, and it's just a matter of moments, you know. But it was funny, when I used that, I had, you know, some feedback of a group of people that got insulted, like, oh, that's so insulting, you know, don't you think we know what we're doing, and this kind of thing. I was like, well, you know, gosh, if it doesn't apply to you, you know, ignore it. you know, it's such a strong message, and I've done it myself because, you know, I didn't know that I was on my way to getting hurt, and a lot of people don't. We tend not to get help. I was just thinking about this today. You know, we tend not to get healthy until we have a health issue. You know, we tend not to you know, drive slower until you have a few fender benders or maybe even something more serious. You know, somehow consequences tend to give us that feedback that we need more information. So I really compliment you, Marie, for asking this question before, you know, it turned into something else. It could be that the horse, I don't think the horse has never done groundwork, in my opinion, from what you're describing. Because a horse that's never done groundwork doesn't pin their ears. They don't turn their hips to you. They don't do those things. My impression, you know, when you see a pattern of behavior like that, is that somebody has done some form of groundwork, whether skilled or not, and the horse has developed a pattern of behavior, because when a horse points its butt to you, you know, you back off. I'll tell you what, if you get into a fight with a horse, I'll bet $10 on the horse every single time, every time. Because it's a large, powerful animal. So, you know, all it takes is for a horse to swing its butt. So imagine, you know, keep it in mind that the release of pressure is what teaches a horse. A horse spins its ears and charges at a person. And the person doesn't know what to do, so they retreat. And in the horse's mind, because the pressure was released, if you wanted to train a movie horse to pin its ears and charge for the camera, that's exactly how you would do it. You put pressure on the horse, and when it pinned its ears, you take the pressure away. You put pressure on the horse, you pin its ears, you take the pressure away. You put the pressure on it, pin its ears, and you'd hold the pressure until he kind of snaked its head at you, and you take the pressure away. And then you put the pressure on. Do you see? You can actually teach this is how you train movie horses to have those kinds of behaviors. But you can go up and absolutely teach a horse to have that posture and not even have the emotion to it. A lot of times we look at it as that it's an emotional reflection, and it is a reflection of their thought or idea. But everybody has seen a horse pin its ears, bite another horse, and put his ears forwards and go back to their own business. You know, they let things go. So here's the thing that I'd recommend. If the horse's hindquarters are coming at you, I'm guessing that you're in a round pen at liberty. And I don't recommend that when people are in the learning stage or the horse is in the learning stage, that that's where you start, at liberty. A lot of people go out there and they say, oh, yeah, round penning, we're going to round pen. And I'll tell you what, it's really easy for a horse and a human to get out of position and get into trouble in those situations. So here's the bad news and good news. The bad news is that your horse has a behavior that it didn't just invent today, okay? For some experience at some point in its life, it's pinned its ears, it's charged a person, it's you know, pointed the hip at him and the pressure has been backed off, which isn't a bad thing to do if you don't know what else to do. Because I've seen people, I saw a YouTube thing the other day somebody sent me, and the person, the horse was out in the pasture, you might have seen it, and it put its head down and it's grazing, and the person was kind of petting it, and then it walked away, and then the person came up right behind that horse, putting pressure on that horse, and that horse jumped up and kicked out, and I mean, this foot was inches from this person's face. I mean, just inches. And so a horse, any horse, can, you know, throw a kick, you know, just like any kid, you know, a person can throw a punch. So here's what you do. Start online. Start with a halter and lead on the horse to start teaching the horse and yourself how to learn the positions, how to apply the pressure in a sequence with release at the end of the sequence to teach the horse what it is that you want them to do. And so, Melinda, you're absolutely right. You know, it's difficult for me to describe, you know, without a video explaining it, especially for a horse that has these patterns of behavior, how to get the two of you together to do these things. So here's what I would suggest is, you know, get the video. You know, go online, look at the Cornerstone for Communication and the Riding from the Ground. Just start with those two DVDs. Get equipment that's going to put you in a position for success. Okay, it's important. You know, I'm the worst salesperson in the world, and, you know, my husband will tell you that. But if I didn't tell you that the tools that I offer would help you, you know, I'd tell you just use whatever, but it absolutely makes a difference. So start with those two and start with just the basics. Don't go at liberty with this horse, with these patterns of behavior, because somebody can come in and you'll hear it. You know, somebody could come in and go, oh, I'll show you how to do that, and they'll go in, they'll get after that horse, and they'll get that horse running around. And so maybe, you know, you win the battle, but you're going to lose the war, and number one. And number two, it didn't teach you anything. It didn't teach you how to rebuild, you know, the trust and confidence of the horse. So that's my, you know, best recommendation to that help you. Is to get you started, you know, in a safe scenario, halter and lead, and start with those basics and rebuild the communication and trust with that horse. And I'll talk about it. And you pay attention on that video to the effective position on the lead rope. That's going to be critical for you. And I talk about it in all my clinics. I talk about it on my videos. People go out there sometimes with a halter and lead, and they have what I, you know, affectionately named the soggy rope syndrome, where you have a lead on, but the belly of the rope is just sitting on the ground and people are holding the end of it, you know, supposedly in their mind trusting the horse. Well, that's a great thing to trust a horse, but anything can happen. And you can hold, I'll show you on the video where you can hold, how you can hold that lead rope so that you're giving zero pressure to the horse, but you're in a position to respond with the immediacy. Not if, but when something surprises, you know, you and the horse. You have those habits to do the right thing when your brain, the situation doesn't give your brain even time to think. So get those DVDs, and if it doesn't work for you, just like with any of my products, if you don't like it or it doesn't work or I put you to sleep or, you know, because people bought videos, you know, I'll ask people why they don't buy videos, and they go, well, I bought videos, and they were boring or they were stupid or they didn't make sense or I didn't feel like I could go out and do it. So when I created these videos, it was very specific how I created them so that people would be able to actually go out and do it. That's my best recommendation to you, especially with a horse that has a behavior that's appearing aggressive. I mean, you can go out and get lots of people's ideas, and people can jump in there and run that horse around and work up a good sweat and teach them a lesson. You know, you've seen plenty of examples of that, but I don't believe that that's necessary, and I don't believe that it will teach you the skills that you're asking for and needing, and especially with the patterns of behavior you're seeing with this horse. So just go back to the beginning. Just start over, rebuild it, and that horse will have a whole different view of you and what you're asking of it. You'll actually change the horse's mind about ground skills and make it interesting and fun, you know, for the horse as well. So give that a try and let me know how that goes for you.
Okay. something too, Karen, on your approach to your videos is, for those that haven't watched them, it's good to watch them with the sound on. It's good to turn the sound down and just watch, you know, your hands and what's going on, because you pick up different things when the sound's on, when it's off, or just listen to the sound in another room and not be actually watching what's going on, and you pick up different things that you're like, oh, I didn't hear that, back up, or I didn't
see
that, you know?
Yeah. Well, and here's, that's a great, you know, a great point that you're making there, Melinda, because there's another piece of it. Because this horse has these behaviors, I would recommend watching those two DVDs 3 times each before you go out with that horse. Just watch it 3 times. And every time you watch it, you will see something different. I kind of joke with audiences where I'll say, you know, who's watched my, you know, DVDs more than once? And people raise their hand, and I go, now tell me the truth. When you watch it the next time, it's like I have a little embedded microchip in there that plays a different message, like you hear something different each time, and people are all nodding. They're going, yeah, it's like, and what's happening is that your brain takes in everything, but your attention goes to certain things that you have the greatest need for. And that's my suggestion. You know, with the average person, I say watch it once or twice. You know, go out there, watch a segment, go out and try that first segment. But with this behavior with the horse, with his appearing as aggressive behavior, keep in mind another piece of this: aggressive behavior is defensive behavior. Okay, so when a horse kicks or a horse strikes or a horse charges, horses don't want to behave that way. They behave that way because they don't know what to do, and now we're yelling at them. Okay, so imagine if you're somewhere where the entire country is speaking a different language and somebody comes up to you and you don't understand them and now they're yelling at you. They could be yelling at you to say, get out of the way, the train's coming, and save your life. But, you know, it could be something good. But you don't know that because it appears aggressive and you'll get defensive and actually become aggressive in your behavior, thinking you have to defend yourself. So, you know, always looking at things, you know, are approached through the horse's eyes. And it's not necessarily that you would ever hurt your horse and do anything intentional like that, but the horse has perceived it. It's been reinforced with comfort at some point in their life. And what you're asking is not even just from scratch, like the horse has never done ground skills. Like I said in the beginning, this horse has developed this pattern of behavior. It's been inadvertently reinforced. I'm sure it's never intentional by people. But go back to the beginning and develop your skills and change the horse's mind about the ground skills. Again, make it something interesting and fun for him. And you'll see a huge change. You'll see it in the eyes of the horse. They'll kind of look and go, you mean I get comfort in this deal? You mean this is interesting? You mean I can understand you? And that's where you bond with a horse, when you're able to hold a conversation with a horse, especially helping a horse change its mind about something that it's already formed an opinion about. It's just like anybody, you know, you go through something difficult with somebody and you get to the other side, you have a closer connection with that person because of that situation. So I'll look forward to hearing from you how that goes.
Okay. Karen, also your new DVDs that you have out, the Fix It Today ones, you've got 6 of those out, and one is on kicking. Would that be a good one as well for her to watch?
You know, it's always good. DVD, you know, I'd recommend that for anybody. The horse in that particular DVD was pretty extreme. That horse, you know, really kicked quite a bit. That's why I used it. And you could see even with that horse, who was really committed to kicking, you know, I really emphasized position on the lead rope, using the proper tools, how the tools, you know, help you in those situations when you're shaping that kind of behavior. You know, it absolutely could help, you know, but okay. I don't think you have that scenario quite yet. But it's everything that I teach in the foundation DVDs that I recommend, you know, applied to an extreme behavior.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it absolutely could help, because if the horse is swinging its hindquarters to you, you know, the next step is going to be throwing a kick. I mean, it's just, it just is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Maureen, for sending that question in. Please keep safe,
yes.
And definitely go online and take a look at those videos. And it's certainly cheaper to get the videos and watch those than it is to have a medical pill. So if you survive
yes.
it. So, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is getting help before you get hurt. You know, you're seen. I mean, that's why you wrote in the question, you know, that absolutely could be. I know people. I have a dear friend who is, I mean, people get kicked, you know, and we don't fare that well. We don't have the physiology of another horse where we can take a kick like that. We just don't. So, you know, please get the tools and the education you need to help the horse. What most people would do is say, would be, well, don't do ground skill. You know, that might be an answer too. Well, just don't do ground skill. But, you know, to me, that's like saying, well, the child pitches a fit when I want them to empty out the garbage, so just do it yourself. You know, that's not right. That's not, you know, you don't want to have what I consider a, you know, limited relationship with a horse where the horse does this but doesn't do that. You know, it's okay here but not here. You know, that's just avoidance. And avoidance comes from not knowing what to do. And sometimes avoidance can save your life. It's not a bad thing. But you need this information because if a horse won't do this, what else won't it do? Then you start having what I call a conditional relationship with the horse. And, you know, it doesn't need to be that way. You're doing the right thing by saying, okay, what do I need to know and how do I need to go about it? So I'm really looking forward to seeing how this turns around. And one day that behavior will just be a thing of the past, and the trainer person might even go, hey, wait a minute, that horse, you know, how did you do that? I had trouble with that one. You never know. So.
All right, well, thanks for submitting that question. And, Karen, if you're ready, we'll go ahead and move on then.
Great.
Okay. This one's from Pam, and it says, and it looks like it's for more than one horse. You see what you think. It says, how do I get my horse to maintain a gait? I can't ever keep a horse in a jog trot for very long. They always want to go back to a walk, be it at home or in the pasture or at a show in an arena. I don't kick them to go or keep going, and they are on a loose rein. It's not the saddle as it fits them well, and I've learned to sit the jog well and post a trot well. The next one is I want to learn to lope, and the horse I have now has a nice jog lope. I know I need to start in a small arena, but the problem above comes up. If I can't keep him in a jog but for a few steps, how do I get to a lope, and how do I ask for the lope? I do have your DVD set and a few of your new DVDs. If you can help, thanks, Pam, in Colorado.
Okay. Well, on the DVDs, you know, I talk about the sequence to ask for an upward transition, which is to activate your seat, turn that, you know, activation down your legs, turn your toes out, pick them up with the heels, and hold that. If the horse doesn't respond to that or make that upward transition, then holding that squeeze, holding your heel, you know, on the horse, then you're going to take tail of your McCarty rein or your hand or a string or something like that, and you're going to spank yourself, just kind of swing it back and forth and let it touch, you know, your back, and then let it get longer to come down and put pressure at the hindquarters. So you're swinging it side to side rhythmically, not threatening or a big whack or anything like that. You're not going to scare the horse or anything. You're just, that's the rest of that transition. Because when a horse won't go forwards or keeps making that downward transition, what happens sometimes is that we go through that sequence, you know, slowly, and we ask the horse to transition upwards. And so the consequence for breaking gait or the downward transition, the response needs to be faster. Okay, so when my horse is, it sounds like you're doing the right thing, when the horse is going forward, you're leaving the horse alone, okay? So you're not putting pressure on the head, and you're not, you know, kicking with every stride or anything like that, you know, so it sounds like when the horse goes forward, it gets comfort. What's happening then is that when the horse transitions down, you're not taking the comfort away fast enough, or with enough intensity to have the horse not want to do that again. Okay? So it's always consequences. Comfort is a consequence which tells the horse, yes, that's what I'm looking for you to do. Okay, that's comfort. But the discomfort or the pressure is the consequence for saying, you know, boy, I don't want to slow down again. I don't like what happens when I slow down. I like what happens when I keep going. Okay? So sometimes we don't realize, you know, because we're learning, we're in the early stages, and we're going, okay, now I'm going to make that transition up, okay? And then the horse goes along for a while, and then says, well, I'll just transition down and see what happens. And then we go through our gradual transition up again, and the horse goes, well, that was okay. That wasn't that bad. I could do that. And you end up stuck in that spot forever and ever and ever. So, and it sounds like that's where you are. If you can kind of think about it that way, put something important in your mind. Like, we need to get over there, and I'll make a deal with you. Just play a little game in your mind. We go around this arena 4 times. You at a trot. I don't have to do any response. Or even in the beginning, make it half a lap. Make a deal in your mind, something achievable. If you just go around without me feeling like I have to keep you going, you know, you go around a half a lap, I'll transition you down to a walk before you do. Okay? And what's really funny, I can't really explain it, but when you play those little things in your mind, and I'll do that with a horse, you know, say I'm, you know, either on the ground or riding, and I have a place in my mind of where I need that horse to go, you know, and I have a high expectation of the horse. When the horse makes that transition, as I feel the transition, I allow them to break gait. I don't want to be the one to keep them going. But when they break gait, I go through that upward transition sequence faster and maybe with more intensity. So pretty soon the horse starts making the choice of my comfort is in the trot and maintaining the trot. Here's my happy place. Okay? So if that gives you an idea, a couple mental things to do, and also, you know, people will say, well, my horse hates the arena. It won't go in the arena, you know, this kind of thing. But great on cows. If there's cows out there, man, we're on it. And I've had people, I've said, well, why don't you ride and put your horse on cows all the time? And they go, what? And I said, don't you see the cows in the arena? And they look around, they go, I don't see any cows. I said, I see a lot of cows. When I'm riding the horse, I have a feeling inside of me like I'm tracking a cow, like I've got to get there, like I've, you know, we've got a place to go. So if we don't have a place to go in our own mind, the horse picks up on that and says, well, you know, why are we going around the arena? And pretty soon we start agreeing with them, going, yeah, this stupid arena, you know, what's the point? So get that, you know, feeling inside of you. You know, imagine cows. And this, you know, one person that comes to mind, when she started imagining cows, her horse took on a completely different physiology. You could see that horse was going along, going, well, I don't see a cow, but she does. And the more intensity in your focus and the more vivid in your imagination, the horse actually steals that from you. You know, we pick up on those things as well. It's the same thing that we do when, you know, we shake somebody's hand. You can feel them. You know, you walk into a store and the salesperson comes over and offers you help. You know, you can feel whether they're on commission or not, you know. It's those kind of intangible things that horses, you know, really pick up on. So bring that into the picture. Bring in the intensity of the sequence or the consequences. And remember, consequences are not negative. You know, consequence when the horse goes and stays in the trot and gets comfort, that's a consequence for their action. When the horse transitions, say, from a trot to a walk or from a canter to a trot, that you had not asked for, then you're going to go through the sequence and the horse is going to experience consequences there. That's how we learn. That's how we process information, by moving toward things that we want and away from things that we don't want. That's the easiest way I can tell you how to communicate to a horse, how to take their own responsibility to not change gait, not change direction, and to look where they're going. That's a horse's responsibility. And they are absolutely intelligent enough to do it if we're clear in our communication in those sequences that I'm describing. So go back and look at the riding from above, you know, really examine yourself. Am I, you know, going through these? But I'll bet you already you're going, oh my gosh, you know, she gets it. I'm going too slow, you know, through those sequences. And the horse is going, ah, that's not that bad. You know, it must not be that important to go into that trot. So you get some imaginary cows with that feeling inside of you and change your sequence, keep the sequence, but change the intensity of the sequence so it's clearer to the horse what it is that you're asking them to do. Because remember, horses and children, they'll rise to your expectations. They will also lower to your expectations. And that's how, like, somebody like me, I can get on a horse like you're describing at a clinic, and you won't see the problem because the horse recognizes that I know how to communicate my expectations. It's the only difference. But I think with that clarity, that'll give you some things to go off, and I'll bet you tomorrow, just from that little bit of information, I'll bet you it'll get better for you right away. So please send me an email and let me know how that goes for you.
Yeah, and Karen, you did recommend one time that I track cows with Latigo. I don't know if you remember that or not, and it does work. It puts your mind focused. It gives you purpose, and he was getting a little sticky out on a trail going down kind of the mountainside a little bit, and which then made me a little bit nervous because he wasn't putting his feet where I was hoping he was going to put them without going off the side. And we got busy, and we tracked cattle, and that went away. We got busy. So it does work. So
I know. This stuff really, I'm not just making this one up. You know, usually
you
I just make them up. But
Yeah. You didn't make that one up. So it does work. So
well, and believe me, I have done all kinds of goofy things. I could go on and on about what doesn't work, you know, or what seems to work in the short term, but has the horse form a poor opinion of what I'm asking them to do. So, you know, things like spurs, you know, people, you know, might be listening to this going, well, why didn't you tell her to get some spurs? You know, that'll, you know, and I've done that. I had, you know, an old cowboy I used to ride with. He's passed away now, and my horse was slow and sticky and, you know, wouldn't, you know, I didn't realize what I was doing, but I was given my first pair of spurs, and he told me to kick her, and I tell this story at clinics, and I'll ask people, well, what do you think? He said, well, kick her, and I did, and I asked him, what do you think she did? And everybody goes, oh, she took off running. I go, no, she stopped. My horse stopped, dead. And I said, what do I do now? And he says, kick her again. And I kicked her again, and she, all 4 feet came off the ground, and she landed. She was walking fast. And my dear friend, I called him his very dear friend, and he said, there you go. We fixed that problem with those spurs. Now, you just got to wear those spurs so she knows you're going to use them. And that was the instruction. That was my instruction for spurs. But as I, you know, access more information and gain more knowledge, you know, and gains more ideas, more consideration. You know, spurs are a funny thing. That's another subject. But, you know, you notice jockeys don't wear spurs because spurs don't make a horse go forward faster. Now, it might seem like it, just like my little episode where I kicked her the second time and, man, she hit the ground running. But she was moving forward because she was confused. And it was painful. Spurs are for lateral or lifting. Okay, that's what spurs are for. So, you know, the hindquarters is where the engine is. So when I go through that sequence talking about, you know, activating your seat, picking your horse up with your legs, picking them up, you know, touching them with your heels, holding that while you, you know, spank yourself and spank your horse, that's a sequence that the horse starts to recognize, you know, that their comfort is in the upward transition and hold that transition until I, you know, relax my seat. You know, I do everything in reverse. Relax my seat, lift my reins, run my hand down the reins, you know, go through that sequence for the downward transition. So everything is offered in a sequence so that the horse learns when I'm in comfort, keep doing what you're doing until I ask you to do something else. That's a really important expectation for horses. But it's something that they can absolutely pick up on very quickly if we're clear in our communication, both in the sequence of increasing the intensity of the pressure and the release of the pressure, even when the horse just begins to make that upward transition. You know, a lot of times I'll see people and they'll, you know, go through that transition, they ask the horse to go, and the horse starts to go, and they give them kind of one to grow on, you know, or two. So they keep the pressure on, not you know, they're in the learning stage. You're just beginning to learn that it's the release. I want the horse to move into comfort. And then the horse becomes motivated to go forward. It becomes the horse's idea to become, you know, more forward going. They enjoy the upward transition rather than, you know, we drive them from behind for 1 hour, you know. Nobody likes that. So just kind of reflect on that and go back to that DVD, watch it again, and then just change that little couple little things. I'll bet you it'll make a huge difference for you.
Okay. Well, we thank you for submitting that question in and like to hear back from you. We always like that feedback back. So, okay, we'll move on to the next question. This topic is keeping my horse focused, and it's from Jean Marie. It says, I ride with a medium port shank curbit with a chain hobble, which I keep fairly loose. This is a bit my horse came with, a 13-year-old gelding I bought 2 years ago. The previous owner who started the horse told me that the horse was sensitive to bits, and it took a while to find one that the horse was not constantly worrying on. I hold the knotted reins in my left hand with a drape in the reins, but not so much drape that I can't quickly take up the slack if I need to. My horse is sensitive to bits and is quite light on the hand. When we trail ride, my horse wants to look around at everything. He turns his head off to one side, then to the other side, with fairly strong curve in his neck, especially if we are in front or if we are riding alone. I wouldn't mind him looking around if it didn't affect his performance, but the way he does it, he takes his attention off the trail, which often results in him tripping or stumbling, and it puts a curve in his body that affects his gait. So I've started holding the reins in both hands, just a bit shorter, so when he starts to look off to one side or the other, I can touch the rein and bring his head back to center. Is this appropriate, Karen, especially considering that I'm riding with a shank curve bit? Is there something else I should be doing instead? Thanks, Jean Marie.
That's a big subject. It's a really big subject. And the reason it's such a big subject is that bits, you know, I mean, you can just look at the horse industry and, you know, see all the bits and all the opinions and, you know, everything about bits. But kind of in a nutshell, shank bits are for collection. Okay? They're for collected activities. They're for vertical flexion and collection. Okay? So there's nothing wrong with a shank bit for the, you know, developed horse. Now, there's really only two kinds of bits. There's snaffle bits, and then there's shank bits, okay, whether you're in English or Western or anything, okay. Then you get into bitless hackamores, and there's, you know, that's a whole other subject. But just between the snaffle and the shank bit, what's important to know is a snaffle bit does not mean that the mouthpiece is jointed, okay, or bends in the middle. Snaffle bit means it's without a shank, so it's a one-to-one ratio of pressure, okay? And the reason that's important is because when you add a shank, even a short shank, it creates leverage. And what leverage means is that when, well, let's go back to the snaffle bit. One-to-one pressure means if I have 1 pound of pressure in my hand, the horse feels 1 pound of pressure, okay? When you add a shank, that 1 pound of pressure in my hand actually translates, depending on the length of the shank, to more pressure in the horse's mouth. So on a short shank, I can feel 1 pound, but the horse is feeling 3 to 5 pounds. Okay? On a longer shank, I can feel 1 pound of pressure, but the horse is feeling, you know, 8 to 10, you see? So a shank bit is for a refinement. And, you know, you describe that you're, you know, riding on a loose rein and things like that, and the horse is picking up the bit. But what I would suggest is to go back to the basics. You find that's kind of the answer to almost every question is go back to the foundation and find a place where you're able to hold a conversation with the horse. Because when the horse is looking around, I call that the looky move. And the horse is looking around, and I've seen horses do this on the ground and riding in the group or out ahead. You know, you kind of recognize the pattern is when the horse is in the lead and the horse is going, oh, my gosh, I'm out front and I'm not confident. So really what you're asking me is how to build, you know, the horse's confidence. And how you do that is go back to the ground. You know, the horse has more confidence in the human when the human has more confidence and more skilled in their clarity of communication with them. So rather than answer your question in, you know, what's the mechanics of having the horse not do that, I'm going to answer your question in a more conceptual kind of a way that, you know, when the horse lacks confidence, it's because they lack confidence in our skill at communication. And it's not a personal thing. We just don't have the level of clarity that horse needs, that particular individual needs in those scenarios. And that's why your horse doesn't do it, you know, when they have a tail to follow, you know, somebody else is in front of them or something like that. But when they get out there, they're going, oh my gosh, we're the leader and I'm scared to death. And, you know, they can't really count on the person because they don't understand you as clearly as they need to. So what I would suggest is go back to the basics, go back to the foundation and rebuild your communication so that you and your horse have a clarity of communication no matter where you go or what you're doing, whether you're in the front of the group or the back or alone or with people, you know, fill in the blank. That's the true answer to that question, okay? But in response to the behavior of what I call the looky-loos, when horses look off, you know, in the distance, and I've seen, like I said, you know, I had a horse in the clinic here, you know, last weekend in Colorado, and the horse would just all of a sudden stop and look off in the distance. And, you know, it was kind of like, why does the horse do that? And it was like, well, how do you respond when the horse does that? They said, well, I figure he's looking at something, so I just leave him alone. Well, there's the horse's comfort. And it's really amazing. Horses develop all kinds of interesting behavior, whether it's looky-loos or rubbing their nose on their knee or, you know, fill in the blank, because we read into it, we read something into it, we take the pressure away, and the horse develops a little behavioral pattern. And we're a part of it because we're inadvertently reinforcing it, not even realizing that we don't need to. So, you know, it sounds like what you're doing, you know, when the horse looks, say you're riding along on the trail, the horse looks off to the right. Pick up your reins straight up so that there's a little bit of pressure. When the horse goes back to the middle, then drop those reins back down again. Put your hand back down, you know, the reins in the mane, okay? And pretty soon the horse starts realizing that if they want comfort, then they keep their nose, you know, in a certain place. So here's the thing to know about horses, because their eyes are on the side of their head. When their nose moves 45 degrees either direction, and that's not very far, just 45 degrees, they can see a full 360 degrees around them. Okay, one of my teachers, Ronnie Willis, pointed that out to me. And, you know, and I think I was probably at a similar stage where, you know, I wasn't really directing the horse's nose that much. I was thinking, oh, you know, he needs to look here, he needs to do that, you know, it's a horse, right? And, yeah, he gave me that suggestion, and what I learned to do, you know, because it's the beginning of the sequence when you're going to, you know, change the direction of the horse's nose, pick the reins straight up first. And so now, just out of habit, I don't even think about it. I was actually watching myself on video, and my horse, you know, started putting his nose over towards another horse, and my reins came straight up, and his nose came back straight, and I just put it back down. So you can expect that in all scenarios. Because once the nose goes, if you don't respond to the nose going in a direction that you're not asking of it, you know, that's a thought. And so you're going to respond to that thought, not in a, you know, militant kind of a way, but in a directional kind of a way. Because imagine you've got cattle in front of you on that trail, okay? Let's use our imaginary cattle. You have a little calf in front of you in that trail, and your horse's nose needs to be in a certain place for it to be in the position to help that little calf get back to its mom. So you can, again, adopt that feeling inside of you to change your awareness and change your response to when the horse moves its nose. You just automatically pick up that rein and say, hey, you don't see that calf's little tail right there, but I do. And your nose needs to be there to help me do this job. So, again, you know, use that focus. Use your focus to change your horse's focus. And I think you'll see a really big difference. So you try that a little bit and let me know how that goes. But again, don't just take that little quick fix and say, okay, well, I'm done and, you know, it's all good. Go back and get your confidence, you know, transmitted, you know, into your horse's confidence. And then you'll develop those habits that I'm describing in everything that you do with your horse. So let me know how that goes. Try that with your horse and let me know how that goes.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Karen, on that one. We've got time for one last one. Time goes so fast. It's a two-hour seminar. Okay. So we'll get this last one in. It's on a Malby horse. This one is from Terry. And it says, as a rule, I do not hand feed my horse, nor do I play with his mouth. Treats or snacks go into his feeding dish or just on the ground if the dish isn't nearby. After having been away last week due to an illness in my family member, my horse suddenly wants to put his mouth on me whenever I reach out to touch him. I can only assume that someone was hand-feeding him treats while I was away, but cannot be sure. Since I moved quickly enough, I do not know if the end result would be lips or teeth, but I do not want to find out. And I would like to correct the behavior before it gets out of hand. So far, all I have done was to calmly voice a quick and stern no, since I did not know what else to do. A friend suggested a light flick of the fingers to his mouth, but that doesn't seem practical either, especially since I know from past accidental experiences that would startle him and in turn startle me too, which we tend to do that to each other frequently. If it helps at all, my horse has never bitten anyone in the time I've owned him. He is a 9-year-old quarter horse gelding that I've had for 2.5 years now, and for the last 6 months he is being turned out 24/7 with 7 other horses. We recently changed boarding facilities in the spring. He was far too nervous in a stalled environment where we previously were. Also, I'd like to know if you have any plans to visit Connecticut again soon. I unfortunately missed your clinic the last 2 years that you were here. Hope you can make it back. Sincerely, Terry.
Okay. Number one, I'd love to go back to Connecticut. I really enjoy the East Coast. You know, it's funny, I had people there say, well, you know, you need to do some advertising without your cowboy hat on because, you know, this is a lot of English around here. And it's funny because in my mind, you know, horsemanship is non-denominational. You know, what I'm teaching applies to everything from, you know, mules to minis, English Western, dragging horses, you know, and everything in between. So, you know, it's kind of funny on the East Coast, you know, people say, oh, you'd have a bigger clinic, you know, and have more exposure if you wouldn't wear your cowboy hat. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, but my dermatologist, I actually have stitches in my face right now from this year's Mohs procedure. So, you know, not wearing a cowboy hat isn't going to happen. Sorry, East Coasters. But yeah, I really enjoy the East Coast. And if you contact my office, they can connect you with the local contact there, Wendy. And she'll make sure she gets you on her list, you know, to be notified when we do something next year. But that's planned. I just really enjoy Connecticut and the folks there and look forward to going back every year. But as far as it goes towards a mouthy horse, you know, horses investigate their world through their mouth. You know, they don't have hands and, you know, they have these really amazing, you know, lips and mouths that, you know, everybody's done that. They've crushed up a pill, you know, with oats, and the horse can eat the little tiny oats, and the crumbs that are left, if you reassemble them, would form the entire pill, you know. They're really amazing, the dexterity in their mouth, the amount of feeling in their mouth. So they interact, you know, in their world, you know, through their mouth. Now, there's something that I've called the gelding game, and it's usually played by geldings. You don't see mares play it too much. They can occasionally, but it's mostly a game between geldings where they get their mouth on the other one, and then the other one puts their mouth back on them, and they go back and forth, and they go down to their knees, and they go around. Everybody's seen, you know, geldings, you know, out in the pasture playing this game or through a fence or something like that. And some will just play it for hours and hours. They just really have a ball with it. When a horse puts its mouth on you, to me that's an invitation, especially a gelding, that's an invitation to play the game. And I've heard people receive instruction that when a horse puts their mouth on you, that you flick them or whack them or elbow or, you know, these kind of things, or, you know, kill them for so many seconds, you know, this kind of stuff. Well, to me, that's all really unnecessary. And if you flick your horse's nose, say he puts his mouth on you and you respond like another horse would, you have just then accepted the invitation to play the game. And you know, they may back off for a minute, but they go, ha, 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 I'll get you next time, see? Because that's what happens between horses. Okay.
Going on
so,
here.
Sorry. whoever is yelling at the dog or something, we're not muted. That wasn't you, Melinda, was it?
It's not me.
Okay.
But if someone would go ahead and do a star six, if you're not muted, that'd be great.
Okay. It scared me. Almost got out of there. But that's kind of what happens with the mouthy horse. And it can actually compound the problem. And the horse will kind of learn how far they can go. So here's a couple things that I like to do with horses. And young horses will do that too. You know, little baby horses, you know, they're just putting their mouth on everything. So here's what I like to do is when a horse wants to, has number one, backing up cures biting. Like put some distance between you and your horse. All right. So and it doesn't mean you stand away from your horse. You stand there and you put pressure on the horse until the horse gets out of your personal space. Okay. Two things happen in that scenario. The first one, the horse is at a distance that they can't put their mouth on you. Okay. Number one. Number two, when we do that, when a horse moves his feet, particularly in the direction backwards, away from us, and respects that zone of personal space, we move up in the leadership, on what I call the leadership ladder, okay? Because that's what a lead horse would do, would say, hey, you give way to me. You move your feet. I mean, you can look at horses messing around the pasture and tell who's the lead horse by whose feet move. If the feet move, they're not the lead horse. So then a horse has a tendency to not want to put their mouth on you because they have more regard for you or more respect for you. They don't see you as a playmate. And playmates are lower than them on the leadership ladder or the pecking order, okay? It doesn't necessarily mean that, but what you want to do is have the horse have a different opinion of you, okay? So playing like that is not appropriate, you know, between horses and humans, in my opinion, because lips, I've seen people say, well, I let my horse, you know, lick the salt off my arm, they'll sit there and have this horse licking them. And, you know, to me, I just look at that, you know, if you look at horse-to-horse behavior, when would a horse sit there and lick on another horse? Or when would your horse, you know, picturing your horse out, you know, with the other horses in the pasture, which, by the way, is the ideal place for horses to be in groups, because they're gregarious, out with a group of horses in areas that they can move around. You know, stalled environment is the most foreign environment for a horse, for an equine. So I just want to make that little compliment right there. So when you're watching your gelding out there with the other horses, you know, observe that. Does he just go up to any of those horses and put his, you know, big old moose nose on them? And the answer is probably no. And if they do, then they get engaged in that, you know, interaction. They get, into that gelding game. So here's a real neat thing that has helped a lot of people that was shared with me years and years ago. But when a horse wants to put its mouth on me, I go, hey, good idea. I want to put my hands on your muzzle. And I'll take that horse's muzzle, and I won't hit it or anything. I'll just take it and put my fingers in under the lips and up around the gums. Be real careful of the teeth. Fingers are just like carrots. They can snap off with the powerful jaws of a horse. But take your hands and take their lips and their muzzle and just like Play-Doh. Just it's kind of, and they'll sit there and they'll move their nose back and forth and they'll kind of do this, and I keep playing, and they sit there and in my mind I take their dream and turn it into something they're not so happy about, because they're sitting there, wait till I get my lips on her. And I go, great, give me the lips. Let's have the lips. And then I sit there and I mess around and I see if I can hold the tongue. And I, you know, be careful. I'm not saying just stick your hand in there. But I just keep kind of working the nose and working the nose and working the nose. And pretty soon that horse will spit you out and kind of rock back a little bit. And go, I don't know if I like that. And then I just wait a minute, and then the horse goes, but I like putting my mouth on you. And I go, great, me too. And I take their nose and then my hand, and I sit there and mush it around and make funny faces and, you know, handle the nostrils and do all this kind of stuff. And, you know, and it gets uncomfortable for them. And pretty soon they're going, they spit it out. And usually it only takes two or three times, and that horse will stand there next to you and go, maybe I don't want that person inside my mouth anymore. You see? So it's kind of like, rather than saying, no, quit, don't stop scolding, you know, this kind of a thing, I take their idea and make them change their mind about putting, you know, my body part, a body part of me, inside of their mouth. So, because you can't always have that horse at a distance all the time. So I want to give you some strategies of, you know, have that horse out of your personal space, but when you're close into them, when they're putting their mouth on you, it works great for lead ropes too. Horses that like to chew on lead ropes, you know, they'll get it in their mouth, and it kind of starts as a baby sometimes. The cap, you know, when they're getting their adult teeth in, the baby teeth are called caps, and they want to chew on something just like a human baby does. But it can become a habit. But I've taken horses that are chronic at chewing ropes, and I go, hey, you want that rope in your mouth? Me too. And I tell you what, I have taken an entire 12-foot lead rope and put it inside a horse's mouth. And that horse is sitting there going, yay, yay, the rope's in my mouth, the rope's in my mouth, the rope's in my mouth. Pretty soon they're like, spit, 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 and they spit it out. And like I said, it usually only takes a couple of, it takes just a few times. And I've had people, you know, report back and say, my horse never put the lead rope in his mouth again, you see. So rather than taking it away or scolding them or flicking them or, you know, whacking them, you know, all the kind of advice, you know, that we hear out in the horse industry, these are the things that I find that make the more lasting impression. Because, again, you're making the impression in the horse's mind. You're having the horse change their mind about you or the behavior, the interaction that they're having with you. And number one is leadership, and all of these things and all the answers that I give to all these questions, it always comes back to leadership. I want to be the individual that the horse wouldn't even think of putting their mouth on. That's the ultimate. Because would your gelding go out and put his mouth on the lead horse out in the pasture? And the answer is only once. And then that horse would respond appropriately. So always keep in mind that we're interacting in their world. What's appropriate, you know, among horses is the behavior that we can adopt and emulate so that we can have a clarity of communication with these horses. And all of these questions, it all, you know, really comes back to that. So hopefully that technique of, you know, having that the muzzle and the mouth and everything become Play-Doh. I'll mention one other thing. People have said, well, I don't want my horse to not want, you know, me to handle his mouth. I have not found that that behavior does that, because when I do put my hands on my horse's muzzle in a relaxed state, they recognize the difference. So when I put my horse, and I should be able to put my hands on the muzzle, I should be able to feel up around inside the nostrils. You know, if my horse ever needed to be tubed for medication or something like that, I should be able to, you know, handle my horse's mouth. It's important to do those things, all the body parts, you know, but what we usually do is, you know, pet the bigger parts, you know, the shoulder and the neck and things like that, and we don't pay as much attention as we could to the nose and the muzzle and the ears and the, you know, under the tail and between the legs, you know, and all those kinds of things. So, yeah, give that a try and let me know how that works for you.
Okay. All right. Well, Karen, can you believe we're out of time? I tell you. Good staff. So we want to thank everybody for submitting their questions and keep them coming. And thanks for joining us tonight. Karen, is there anything you'd like to say before we close?
You know, I just like to say that I was in Colorado last week. I had a 10-day trip there. And the beginning of that trip started out with my good friend Dan Moyer. And like I've said in the teleseminars at my clinic, you know, I'm committed to continue learning, you know, as much as I recommend everybody else be as well. You know, these horses deserve us to be even better than we are, regardless of, you know, our current skill level. So, I spent a week moving cattle with Dan Moyer. He's been at a cow camp all summer up in Colorado, and the leaves were turning. It was absolutely beautiful. And I'll tell you what, we went through some rough country. You know, people think, oh, yeah, I ride in rough country. I've not seen a rough country like this. We were just in, you know, areas with down trees, and, you know, we had to salt, you know, put out salt for the cattle. We were moving pastures. They were getting ready to ship, you know, in another couple of weeks. And, you know, once again, I just, you know, value the knowledge that my mentors and teachers have shared with me. I want to give a huge thank you for Dan Moyer and other people, Ronnie Willis, who's passed away, the Ray Hunts, Tom Dorrances, you know, Pat Crowley, you know, people, everybody, you draw from absolutely everybody And I'll mention one other piece right behind that. I did a clinic right behind that up in Colorado. And one of the subjects there, and it happens at different clinics, and I'm sure everybody listening has had the experience, people start talking about other educators badly. And I get really uncomfortable with that. And I'll tell you why, because anybody who's in the education industry, in education industry in general, but in particular with horses, they're doing it because they have a great love of horses. And this isn't a popularity contest. This is about sharing knowledge. And even if you don't like somebody, you can still look beyond that and find a piece of knowledge that's going to help you and your horse. So I just want to put a thank you out there to my good friend Dan Moyer for, you know, being so generous with his knowledge. I value it completely. And also just give a reminder, a gentle reminder to people that there's more important things to talk about than the things you don't like about people. That's easy. The greater challenge is for us to look beyond what we don't like or we disagree with and look for the things that might make a difference for us and our horse. This resistance to new knowledge or a different way of doing things does not serve us and is not in the best interest of the horses, in my opinion. And like I say, you know, in my education, I don't expect people to agree with everything that I'm saying. In fact, if you agree with everything I'm saying, then you're not thinking for yourself. But at the same time, I should be able to explain my thoughts and explain the concepts and give you examples of how that's applied and why that might work for you. And, you know, like Melinda said, you know, I did what you suggested, and boy, that really worked. And, you know, it works because I've tried all the goofy things that don't work. Believe me, I didn't just go pop out and go, oh, wow, this really works. You know, and when I'm riding with Dan and, you know, we're talking about things, you know, his preferences, and he made a suggestion of, you know, how he uses his McCarty rein that was a little different than mine, and I used it the way he suggested. And I did things a little different, and I gave it a fair shot. I considered it. I wholeheartedly considered it and said, man, maybe this is a little bit better. And I tried it, and I used it. And you know what? I found that the way I was doing it was a little bit more beneficial to me. And so I didn't agree with him. But that was okay. We didn't have a big fight. We didn't argue. It didn't change anything how I feel about Dan. I just went, you know what? I considered it. With an open mind, I tried it, I used it, and I went, you know what, for how my body works, I don't know, maybe it's woman's physiology or something, you know, to wear my McCarty the way I do, you know, made it easier to get it out when I needed to. So anyway, I just want to put that out there. You know, knowledge isn't a big, shouldn't affect our ego the way it does. I think that's a, you know, part of our human condition, and it's an affliction, really, but yeah, just open our minds to new knowledge and new ways of doing things and keep looking for what's new, regardless of whether, you know, you like the person or you don't. It's obviously easier to learn from somebody that you enjoy and appreciate. But we don't need to spend time, you know, disagreeing or bad-mouthing or anything like that. Just get on track with your horse, spend the time with your horse, and keep searching for the things that are going to help you have a better relationship with your horse.
Okay. Well, Karen, thanks for that word of wisdom. So I'll take that to heart. And we appreciate everybody joining us tonight. We probably ought to close out. We'll try to meet everybody here next month. And please bring in your questions and get those to us. And we'd love to hear from you. So, Karen, thanks so much. And we'll talk to you next month.
All right. Thank you very much, Melinda. Have a good evening, everybody.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.